Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
GND on the Fan on this Friday the 13th in December. As we steamroll down the stretch in the NFL season, the Commanders with a great opportunity to take another step toward the playoffs in New Orleans, where we are live today broadcasting from the French Quarter at Hotel Monteleone. The boys made it into New Orleans without any issue. The connection through Charlotte, Danny, a smashing success.
We got it done. We home aloned it a little bit, but we made it.
We did hoof it through the airport.
Yeah.
I saw you way up in front of us. You got there, and then you stood there, and then we caught you.
Well, I had time to pee, and
so did we.
So I did that, and got there in time for boarding. But everybody should have appropriate respect for travel logistics, and don't just assume it's going to work out. The same way, by the way, if I just sat here the entire time, we're trying to get on air, and going, it'll work out. We'll get on air. Not through magic, through effort. For perseverance,
very different,
and effort.
Very different.
It's kind of the same, just for healthy respect for the process.
Getting on air is up to us to get on air.
Mm.
We have to do things
or
we don't get on air.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to do anything. We had to land and then walk to our gate, and there's people
and we did it.
Running things.
Yeah,
that are flying planes and making sure they don't take off without us. Everything's going to be just fine. Don't you worry your little soul.
Mm. Anyway, I forgot what we were talking about. Oh, yeah, but we did. We got down here, and we got it done. It's awesome. We're talking about a Washington game, and as Washington continues to build the foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you to plan for your future as well. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condoria & Morod can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com, and be sure to tell them that Grant and Danny sent you. That is kmlawyers.com.
Love being out and about and on the road. Those guys brought us to Cincinnati.
That's
for
right.
Our first big road trip of the year. We went to Philadelphia. This is a record for us, by the way. Three roadies in one season for your pals. We've been to three road games, and we're trying to see the locals go 2-1 here.
It'd be nice. A winning record would be nice. To go 1-2 on roadies, that...
The Bengals game actually surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought they'd play close, but I didn't think they'd win. The Eagles game, we went there expecting them to lose. This one, though, is the other way. Like, you just got to find a way to win this football game, right? And there's no good reason why you don't. Everything's lining up for you, which is what we have been discussing. But I want to take a quick look at the playoff picture after last night. So you had the Rams playing the San Francisco 49ers. Did you get to catch any of that on the plane?
Very little. It just the fits and starts, I pretty much gave up and just watched Netflix videos.
So watching the game last evening, it was right there for either team in the fourth quarter, and they both needed it badly.
It's like that classic divisional game where, hey, anything can happen, and literally anything happened. It's like that.
By San Francisco losing, their chances of making the playoffs have now dipped under 1%. So they are all but spent as the 11th-ranked team in a 16-team Eastern, NFC, National Conference at this point. 6-8, best they can be is 9-8. They would need an immense amount of help. So you can basically throw some dirt on San Francisco for now and bury them.
Yep.
And it was not a good day, organizationally speaking. You saw the story with Devondre Campbell, their linebacker, who just refused to play last night, to the point where Kyle Shanahan admitted after the game, yeah, he told us he didn't want to play. And then players came out, Javarius Ward, George Kittle, and said they don't want him on the team anymore. I'm paraphrasing, but essentially that he was selfish, that they couldn't believe he did that, and that they would like to move on without him.
He was then seven, maybe eight. I think he was seven when I was coaching my oldest kid's soccer team when he was 7 years old. He refused to check into a game and left us down a man. That's the level of that. Does that make sense? Like, that's how high that should go. And then you had a nice sit-down Danny Tanner moment when we got home and everybody calmed down. You're part of a team. You can't do that to your teammates. That's not okay. There's a million expectations. Whatever you have going on, I understand that. But you've made a commitment, and you're here now. You need to be here for everybody else just as much as yourself. The idea that that would happen with a professional, I can't fathom it. I can't.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Think about that locker room right now. I mean, think about him, and we don't know the specifics on why he didn't check into the game or refuse to play and basically quit and is going to be cut. But I think they would have acknowledged if there was something serious going on with his family or whatever. This guy said, nah, I'm good, when Fred Warner was playing on a broken ankle.
Yeah.
The other guy in the linebacking room, Fred Warner, playing on a broken ankle. How about Dre Greenlaw had just come back after 10 months of a massive rehab where he was trying to get back on the field. And Charvarius Ward, who after the game called him selfish and said he'd never seen anything like it, he is playing a couple weeks after the death of his child with a heavy heart, having rejoined the team after a very short respite. Like, that's what's going on in your locker room. Trent Williams, by the way, gutting it out, trying to get back after he lost a baby in, like, one of the saddest stories I've heard in a long time for a really good guy. And all of this is going on for these dudes that are laying it all on the line in this December game of football. By the way, your playoff opportunity is at stake.
Yep.
And the walls are caving in at the linebacker position with injuries, and they go, hey, man, we need you. And he goes,
I don't feel like it.
Nah, I'm fine. I thought we would all agree on this one, by the way. I know we can't agree on anything in America anymore, like nothing. We don't know who's good and who's bad, and is the good guy good or the bad guy bad. We can't figure anything out.
Right? Well, let me just correct you there, if I may, just quick interjection.
Sure.
Like, if you're listening, we agree with you.
We do.
See what I'm saying? Like, the bad thing? Oh, it's so bad.
So bad.
And the good thing, we're with you. Yeah, we see that it's good. We're all on the same team, same side.
But I thought when Devondre Campbell just decided, the football player who's paid a lot of money to play football, that he didn't want to play football and left his team high and dry, to the point where the coach and the players came out after the game to go, yeah, this was pretty bad. We'd all just say that. I saw people last night going,
of course,
actually defending him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, we don't know what's going on. True, but taking the next step forward. One of the folks, Josina Anderson, who's like a reporter, was saying essentially, this is not the time to suggest he should be released. Like, this should not be worth losing your job over. This is when you, like, wrap your arms around him. Like, can we find out exactly what we need to wrap our arms about him for? Maybe he just decided he doesn't like football last night. Or here's what I know. If Kyle Shanahan, George Kittle, Ward, and some of the other players in that locker room are all saying, I'm good without this guy, then I'll just assume they might have a little more information than I do.
At the risk of upsetting some people, here we go. I think you can do both. You can wrap your arms around him if he's going through something. There's still a professional obligation. He needs to be cut immediately and should be cut immediately. He should never play for that team again. And you can also reach out on a personal level. See, what's going to happen now is there's going to be a concerted effort and attempt to make him the victim of something somehow, some way. That's coming out. I guarantee you the next 48 hours, 72 hours, whatever, we're going to hear some things that are supposed to be sympathetic. I'm sorry you have stuff that you're going through. You just laid out what other people are going through. That I'll take that in a face-off in terms of if we're having to out-victim each other as to bad things that guys and folks are going through. I'm sorry that's happening. There's a commitment. If you'd like to do something, you know, the following Monday or Tuesday, where you go, Coach, my heart's not in it anymore. I don't think I can do this. But at least there's some planning available for your teammates and for people that are doing everything they possibly can. In the middle of the game, if somebody else was active instead of him, that guy could have played.
Sure.
Right? But you leave people in the lurch. It was the same thing with Sua Cravens after cuts have been made. If you don't feel like playing football anymore, you can't do it right then. Once you're
timing
on the roster, the commitment and the timing of it when people can't plan for it is so selfish and so irresponsible. Again, I'm sorry if you're going through something. I have no idea either way. You can't do that.
But I like your point that you can do both. Like, it doesn't have to be that you vilify him and never talk to him again. But there should absolutely be a ramification for what he did. There should 100% be a consequence for his action. Now, if you're saying maybe the consequence should only be a suspension, okay. Does he want to be in that locker room? I've never seen teammates come out and call a guy out to the extent that happened last night, which tells you everything you need to know. But, this was the tweet from Josina Anderson, who is an NFL reporter working for, I think, FanDuel or CBS maybe. But she responded to a tweet, which was Charvarius Ward, the DB for the 49ers, who, again, is playing shortly after losing his baby and has been going through just a hell of a time this year. But he basically came back and said, I got to be here for my brothers. You know, they're going to be there for me. His quote was, it definitely hurt the team. He's probably going to get cut soon. And he essentially endorsed it. She said, no, there's no need to jump to an instant job loss. He should be given time to share his mindset, to commune with his teammates after more time, and then reflect to demonstrate better judgment. There's a lot of things you can do to get that punishment. Like maybe you're late to meetings, or you don't show up for a practice, or perhaps you show up after a curfew at the hotel a couple times. When you just flat out say, I'm not going into the game, I don't remember that. This is the third incident that I can remember of a player kind of quitting on a team during the game. The first was Vernon Davis's brother, the defensive back, Vontae Davis, who at halftime, I think, just kind of walked off the field. And I remember the quote. I think he was with the Buffalo Bills at the time. He was a longtime Miami Dolphin. And Lorenzo Alexander had this quote that went everywhere. I don't think he meant anything by it. But he's like, yeah, I think he retired. He just left at halftime. And it was like, I just still remember that.
Yeah.
That one. And then there was Antonio Brown ripping off his jersey and his pads and doing jumping jacks in the end zone, if you remember, with the Bucks.
Yes.
Because he should have had a job, I'm sure. And then he did whatever that routine was and then walked into the tunnel. He, like, told Bruce Arians, I think he yelled, bye, Felicia, or something, and then he, like, walked down the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most ridiculous, stupid things
I've
ever
seen. I mean, it's even beyond Albert Hainsworth laying down on the field when Andre Carter has to hurdle him chasing Michael Vick.
No, these are three incidents where someone actually, like, quit
like
the team.
Like, actually quit like
that. Out of a movie, like, the Mighty Ducks were playing, and, you know, they just decided they don't want to be on the team anymore.
So I'm actually fascinated by this story, and I did a little bit of digging around through some San Francisco beat writers last night. And it seems like some of this has to do with that Campbell lost the starting job to Dre Greenlaw, who was coming back. Last night was Dre Greenlaw's first game since tearing his Achilles.
I mean, not to quit on your team, but that is what do they call it? A motivator. Danny, what is it in crime? A motive.
A motive. Yeah, so over the last
Not that I've committed crimes, I just happen to know.
You're a criminal, we know.
Over the last couple of weeks, they kind of had slowly been phasing Campbell out after he had been starting all year. D. Winters had kind of stepped in the last couple of weeks, and now Dre Greenlaw's
back. Oh, so this was the bit where, like, Greenlaw's back, then they have an injury in the game, and they're like, oh, we need you.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, now you need me.
That's part of it.
By the way, that is such a middle school football thing, if I've ever – seriously.
Again, my 7-year-old.
That is what a child does.
Yes.
That is 100% like a – the attitude of an entitled person that goes, oh, now you need me? You didn't answer my call a week ago. If that's the case, that is absolutely egregious. Not that there's a good excuse, by the way. Like, short of his wife went into labor in the third quarter and he ran off the sideline like it was Robert Griffin live on TV for some ADs. Unless that was the case, there really is not a good reason for last night. And we know it's not the case because I don't think George Kittle would have come out at the podium and called him out the way he did. I don't think Charvarius Ward, which, by the way, when did he start being Mooney Ward? Everyone on Twitter was calling him Mooney last night.
I think that happened within the last year.
I'd prefer that it hadn't have.
I'm a little out on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's worse, Mooney or Nuke? For Hopkins.
Ugh.
They can all go. Like, just names.
No,
are
fine. What's worse? Come on. I'm pinning you down and forcing you to answer.
I'll say Mooney Ward is worse.
Mooney.
Because, like, DeAndre Hopkins was – people called him Nuke at Clemson. Like, I remember that always being the case.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard Mooney Ward, and then everyone last night was like, you heard what Mooney said? I'm like, what did Darnell Mooney have to do with this?
Yeah, Darnell
– he plays for the Falcons.
Zach Mooneyham from School of Rock? What are we talking about?
Why does Darnell Mooney have an opinion on what Devondre Campbell did for the 49ers?
Paul Mooney, the comedian? What I don't get is – I do get this. Let me show that again.
Now I'm confused.
No, I don't get it, but here's what I get.
Okay.
This phenomenon has always driven me crazy. So here's me. I'm just Danny Rouillet, right, doing the afternoon drive show with my pal Grant Paulson. If I want to pretend that I'm closer to a player than the regular person that's listening, I'll be like, So I was texting with Mooney the other day. It's trying to show that you're one of the cool
kids. You go full nickname.
Yeah. So it's this desperate attempt to do that. So I remember, like, certain guys on radio here years ago, instead of being like Griffin or whatever, they would always do this thing where they go, so the thing about Robert versus, or the thing about Kirk, and it's like, we're on first name basis. Like, we talk to each other.
I do hate that.
Whereas, like, the regular thing, and so it's a one-up from that, where it's like, if you're in the know, then you get to call somebody Nuke, or you call them Mooney, or whatever their nickname is. Like, because we're butts.
So
we're
part
of the same fraternity. And that, it's not necessarily the nickname that's everyone uses.
Yeah.
If they use it, that's great. It's not whatever. But that's the pathology, and I hate that.
So what I hate, my gripe is generally the nickname as a name. But if there is a wall you can break through when it just becomes your name. So Champ Bailey's name probably isn't Champ. In fact, I know that it's not.
It's like Alex.
But he was Champ Bailey.
Yeah.
He was always Champ Bailey. That was his name.
Mm-hmm.
There are guys like that, right, where we can all think of a few. The one that gets to me is when the player, especially if they're not all that good, just suddenly starts going by a thing, and I'm just supposed to do it and care about it. So I'll give you a great example.
Okay.
I have nothing against this guy. In fact, I really like this player's upside based on a couple preseasons. But there was a DB here that was drafted in the 7th round named Christian Holmes. And all of a sudden at training camp, people started calling him Sip Holmes.
Oh, this is so good.
Now, Christian Holmes, in the locker room with his boys, is called Sip. I don't know why. There's probably a backstory. Maybe there's not. Not my business. But they all call him Sip. That doesn't mean, because you heard that in the locker room one time when you're doing interviews, that now you call him Sip. Thing.
Yes.
So everyone's like,
everyone's probably wondering why I'm laughing so hard.
Well, it's not as funny as you're laughing.
It is, because all I can think about is the number of times off air behind the scenes that you have unloaded on this one.
Well, it's just like, who is Sip Holmes? You have two pass breakups and two starts. You don't get to be Sip. I'm sorry. So like that one, or who was the linebacker who they would sign off the practice squad
every other week?
Scooter Harris.
Scooter.
Scooter. His name was Dejon Harris, or Dejon, I think. Harris. I don't remember.
Dejon Gomes Harris.
How could I possibly remember? But they would sign him off the practice squad, and the people would be like, they signed Scooter Harris. No, they didn't. I can do Nuke Hopkins. I can do that. I don't want to, but if I have to, I can do it. He's going to the Hall of Fame. I need some pelts on the wall.
You can't do Sip.
If we're going to just start going by nicknames.
Just go full Sip.
That's kind of one of my frustrations.
By the way, again, thank you for bringing this up.
Yeah.
This, I'm almost in tears right now.
How did we get on this?
I don't remember exactly.
Mooney Ward.
Mooney!
Yeah.
Grant took, like, the high-caliber weapons, and one in each hand before several shows, and just shot them into the air. Everybody caught strays. Just screaming about Sip. Like, to the point that, like, CK came in and thought something was wrong one of the times.
Just
like he joined in the two. And it was it's so funny, and I'm remembering that conversation.
But here's what
it
is.
Oh, it's so good.
It's like if you don't call him that, you don't, like, what don't you know?
Are you in the circle? You're outside,
yeah,
buddy.
It's like, what are you talking about?
You want to be in?
When is the first time you heard Mooney for Charvarius?
Within the last, sometime at the beginning of the season.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So I want to say he officially made the switch beginning of the season.
It was in 13F last night when I was scrolling Twitter after the game, and they're like, Mooney Ward said this, and I'm like, is that the same as Charvarius? And then I see the Charvarius press.
Is it his brother?
And I'm like, it's got to be the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like trying to cross-reference. But anyway, Devondre Campbell, probably not a great business decision, because you mentioned end of the road in San Francisco. Why would you hire him if you're another team? Isn't there something to be said for the guy that quit? Now, you could say the same maybe for, like, Marcus Mariota, if you remember. Marcus Mariota just walked off the Falcons a couple of years, and it doesn't seem like anybody was overly bothered by that. He went to the Eagles. Now he's in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody seems to really like him. It seems like a very good guy, a good leader of men, backup quarterback type. But I don't know. To me, like, in the same way that I have a do not draft list, if you're you have a weight problem like I do, or if you have some kind of red flag character thing, I would have a do not sign list, and he got put on it last night.
Oh, 100%. I have a whole bunch of people on that list, and I call it the Josh McDaniels list. Like, absolutely. That, to me, it's disqualifying. Somebody else may get it. Someone else may get through to him and turn him into a great player.
He could have six straight 100 tackle seasons with 4.5 sacks and be a Pro Bowler three times.
Yeah.
And I would say congrats to both of you.
That's awesome.
Devondre, you turned your career around. Team, you benefited from that. He will not be my guy doing that.
It ain't going to be me.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know. You can think of an example. Someone that, you know, that you know, and that person is attractive. Gosh, they're really, really attractive. Member of the opposite sex. And they have a terrible track record of dating and crazy behavior. You go, I'll be the one. I'll be the one to get the best out of them. And then you end up in flames, and it's sort of like, I just don't want to be that person. I don't want to be the one to try to fix anybody. I don't have time for it. It's hard enough to do it in this league.
Yeah. The normal people that I file into this category have track records of this.
Mm-hmm.
James Harden, everywhere he goes, weirdly, he leaves, and it's in flames all around him. Like, if it's happened two or three times, Odell Beckham Jr. is moving on from the Dolphins. And I loved today reading. It was like, Odell Beckham has decided he wants a new start. I'm sure he decided after weeks of ineffectiveness and not helping. I mean, how many of these are we going to do? This fresh start with a new team and new opportunities? I'm the most sure, by the way. But, like, at some point, I just go, yeah, I'm out on that business. Not for me. And Devondre Campbell, unfortunately, it was just a one-time deal.
Yeah, but hold on.
But this was a bad enough offense that you are moving to the front of that list.
Let me push back real quick on Harden. You're telling me you wouldn't give up multiple first-round picks over multiple years plus a current asset to ship everything to try to trade for him?
I would, actually.
Wouldn't you just do that?
Now that I think about it.
Right. I mean, think about, like, now you would do that, right? Like, multiple teams have. You would do that.
Based on the Rams winning last night?
Yeah.
Things changed a little bit for the Commanders.
They're right
the
there,
playoff
man.
Push.
Breathing on your neck.
They are breathing on the back of our necks. Let's talk about that next. Grant and Danny live from New Orleans on The Fan.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Grant and Danny on The Fan live from New Orleans. Thank you for making the show part of your day. All right, so the win yesterday for the Rams means that they are 8-6. They are one half game behind Washington. The math here on the seven seed's pretty easy for right now. The Commanders beat the Saints. They are a game ahead of the Rams. If they lose to the Saints, they now fall even with LA. The Rams would not overtake Washington for the seventh and final playoff spot because the Commanders have the tiebreaker. The first tiebreaker after head-to-head, and they're not going to play the Rams this season, is conference record. You look at Washington's conference record, this is going to be very friendly for them in all tie-breaking situations. They are 5-3 in the NFC right now. In fact, the only team that's kind of in the vicinity of them in the hunt for a wild card spot that is a better conference record is the Atlanta Falcons, who are 6-3. That could change, obviously, moving forward. But specific to Washington, they will have the tiebreaker over the Rams, who do not have as good a record in their conference play this season. Even after their win over San Francisco, which improved, they're now 5-5. I mean, they've been kind of mediocre. They've really put hay in the barn with a 3-1 record against the AFC. So, yes, they could fall even with the Rams, but they would still have the tiebreaker. And I should say this, too. The Rams control their own destiny in the NFC West, as we've talked a lot about, Danny. So they're actually, after three straight wins and four wins in their last five, they're still more likely, I would say, to win the West than to get that wild card spot. They play the Jets, the Cardinals, and the Seahawks, who they have basically pulled even with if Seattle loses this week. So I could easily see the Rams winning the West the way they're playing right now, which means Seattle would be the team falling out of the first spot, and maybe the team you got to worry about if you're the Commanders. They still play the Packers, the Vikings, the Bears, and they finish with the Rams.
Yeah, so that's certainly a path, but the point is you now have another team that's right there. So you drop a game, you're 8-6, and now you got to go to the third column of the tiebreakers. Washington will be 5-4 in the NFC after a loss, because it'd be another NFC game, whereas the Rams are 5-5 with two more NFC games rather to go for them. Washington in a similar space. This is talking about controlling your destiny. This is so there for you. This isn't like, man, you got to go to Detroit and win this weekend because that's what your destiny says. This is, you beat a bad team.
Yeah.
That's already fired their coach. You're in control. Nobody, doesn't matter what anybody else does, right?
So to that point, I teased this last hour. I want to get into this. I won't speak for you. You can give your own opinion on must wins. I kind of cringe at the idea of any kind of radio topic when I hear, like, is this a must win?
Mm-hmm.
When it's not a must win. Doesn't mean it's bad. It's just not for me. I just don't enjoy it. I don't like listening to that because, frankly, it's pretty easy. Like, it's a mathematical thing. Either you have to win a game or you don't. There are, though, bigger games than others. There are games that matter more. This is obviously one of those. So in this case, this weekend, if they beat the Saints, they're going to be 90-plus percent likely to make the playoffs. If they don't beat the Saints, I would think they're still going to be somewhere in, like, the low 70s in terms of their percentage chance to get in, I would imagine. So it's not a must win, but what is it then for me? And I think this is just a, you should win this game. You know, you need to win this game. This is a gotta-have-it game as far as I'm concerned. I just don't do must wins. That's my own weird thing. So is this a must win? Absolutely not. You can make up for not winning this game by beating the Eagles next week, and you're right back where you started because you should have gone 1-1 in those two as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so I've never had the same preservation or, you know, proclivity that you do. I respect it. We don't do that very often on the show. I'm not, like, so passionate, like, dude, we have to do the must-win topic this week. I don't play that way either. But I'm perfectly fine saying it, and it is to me, because the synonyms for must are ought to, should, got to, need to, be required to, compelled to, be obliged.
Definitely a semantic.
These
deal.
Are all yeah. the things. And my point is, there's multiple reasons. One, to make the postseason. But two, this is the bigger one for me. Because to me, I'm still treating the postseason as not a right, but a luxury. And I'd like it. I want it to happen. I think it's important given where they are and given the deposits they've already made. But let's say, for the sake of argument, they go 3-1 down the stretch and the Rams win all the rest of their game. Actually, that wouldn't work out math-wise. But, like, whatever. Let's say they finish 2-2, and the Rams win the rest of their games, and they get overtaken, and they don't make the postseason, but they won 10 games. That's a bad luck year. Sometimes you win 7 games. You get into the dumb postseason. Ron Rivera will dine out off that for 4 seasons. But to me, the fact is, this is now, again, about kind of validating the program. I put a lot more stock into it, I think, maybe than you do and a lot of other people do, where you're going – it's very easy to everybody refrain and talk about the brotherhood and talk about this and that and all the, you know, everybody pulling the rope the same direction. If you can't go on the, you know, go beat a crappy team that's playing out the string in December, then it's not just empty words again. You know, then it sort of echoes and reeks of Rivera. It's different, and it's not, I understand it's better in every respect because
well,
there's
let me
real
say
GM
this in a different
and everything
way.
Else. But it just feels, I'm sorry, let me just finish. It feels it's sort of like, okay, it's another set of slogans. It's another be where your feet are for a little while. And really nothing is really that special.
Totally.
Right?
But I would say this. If they lose to the Saints, first of all, I think you should say, or you can say, how good are they actually?
Yeah.
Like, with their resume, they are totally susceptible to be called out, and understandably.
Yes.
They have not beaten one really good team.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have a win against a really good team
yep.
this season. Even, I would say, a good team, honestly. If we're saying their best win is probably Arizona, they don't have one of those.
Right.
Okay? So that's number one. Number two, if you lose this game to the Saints, how much different are they than last year, to mm-hmm. your point? Like, the succinct thing I would ask is, how much progress have they made if, yes, they have taken advantage of a weak schedule, yes, they might make the playoffs, but all they've done is really beat bad teams or average teams that are kind of equal to them,
mm-hmm.
and they've lost some games, by the way, to terrible teams that they shouldn't recently, Dallas and New Orleans. It would also be the second time in a month that that happened.
Yes. And it's a later sample, too, right?
Right?
That's the important
part. They didn't
part.
Have yeah. any of those in the early part of the year.
That's
they
right.
didn't let down. When they played Cleveland, they killed them.
They kicked
played
their
Arizona,
butts. Yeah.
They destroyed them. Now they're doing this late in the year where you lose to the Cowboys, where you lose to the Saints. And I think reasonably you can say, wait a second, was this just a fast start? Or is this actually not that different than mm-hmm. the team was a year or two ago? Now, big picture, you've got the quarterback, hopefully.
Exactly.
You got the GM. But from just a 2024 in a vacuum standpoint, Danny, it's the same kind of deal.
Yeah, so again, we always talk about this, but a sample that's new either reaffirms what you previously thought or forces you to re-examine. So I guess my point here is, if one of the narratives or points of discussion that by the way is valid and people dismissing it are crazy pants, but the Cliff, right? His offenses are worse in the second half of seasons. That's going back to college. That's fact. There are reasons for that. You could debate those reasons, how important they are. That's fine. That's not the point. The point is the offenses have gotten worse. You had a great deposit counter to that 2 weeks ago against Tennessee, where they beat the brakes off of Tennessee. That offense was humming and excellent and awesome, and it looked like adjustments were made. The point of bringing up the Cliff isn't to point at someone and say, I got you, or I told you so. The point is, do something different when it ain't working. Move Terry McLaurin to the other side. First play of the game, Terry McLaurin on the other side, and he gets the GD football. Yes, yes, yes. So you do that again, right? You demonstrate adjustments. Because everyone's got tape on everybody at this point. Everybody knows everything. You got to go against type a little bit. We don't have more talent than everyone else, and they certainly don't, in my opinion, on offense, right? Their number two receiver, who's now out, was cut by the Houston Texans. You are not among the elite in the NFC, even in your own division, in terms of offensive playmaking talent, especially on the outside. I love Terry McLaurin too, but there's teams that have got a lot better weaponry. And you can't just rely on skill. You got to keep adjusting, adjusting, adjusting. You saw that against Tennessee to a degree. If you get another one of those, what it basically says is, remember that problem? It ain't a problem. Cliff has gotten better. Cliff used his year in Thailand and his year coaching Caleb Williams at USC to get into the lab and figure out some counters to the counters to the counters. Now we got something going here. You dispel the bad. You get rid of some of these narratives, these slowdowns, because those things happen. You saw against the Steelers, Eagles, and Cowboys, three consecutive weeks, really over 10, 12 days, a slowdown and a dramatic underperformance by an offense. The first two we could excuse, hey, good defenses. Well, the Cowboys ain't. That group couldn't stop a stiff breeze. And now all of a sudden, you put a couple more deposits in the bank on the good side here in December against another bad team. You run up the score a little bit. Now we got something.
I just can't go as far as to say it's a must win.
I hear you. I get it.
If they, by the way, like there could be a path to that. I mean, number one, if they were facing elimination, obviously mm-hmm. it would be. But that's literal.
Yeah.
I think there's even a figurative must win that I can get behind.
Yep.
That, you know, that I can kind of accept. And that would mean that the team probably is like 7-6 right now or,
yep.
or certainly 6-7, something like that.
To stay alive, they'd have to have it.
Yeah, but let's say they'd lost to the Titans, mm-hmm. okay? And at that point, they will have lost four straight games, then coming off their bye on the road against the Saints. Now this is absolutely a must-win at 7-6 because you're at risk of falling behind the Rams in the wild card because you can't lose five in a row mm-hmm. for all these reasons. This is a gotta-have-it game. This is a if-you're-any-good-you-win-this-game game.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the way I do it.
Yep.
You're off of a bye by the week, by the way. We haven't really talked about that.
Yeah.
The only other time this season where they had extra rest and had a mini bye and like went into a game with more time to prepare was their worst game of the year against Dallas. You can't do that twice. I now have to start asking some questions about did we have a bad plan during the bye? Was giving this coaching staff more time to prepare and more days? Why didn't that affect things positively? Like week one, you had a whole offseason to prepare for the Bucs. They got blown out. The mini bye against the Cowboys, terrible start. If you come out and you lose to a bad Saints team off a bye, that's a really bad look where three times both coaching staffs got mm-hmm. more time to prepare for the other team, and it went badly for you in all three of those games. But I'm not going to say must win. I will just say if they're any good, they'll win. And if they don't win, then like the Cowboys game, I think we've just got to start assuming, well, they'll make the playoffs because someone's got to, and because they've handled their business against teams that are in a worse spot, but that doesn't really get you a whole lot. It reminds me more of Rivera's first year.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
And that was a 7-9 team, and this will be maybe a 10-7 team, so that is a difference. But it also just means maybe you played more of those games where the other team didn't care that much.
Yeah, and you get to go, again, at the time it was fun. You and I said this about you know Taylor Heineke starting a playoff game and going 7-9 at that point, I think. I think that they hadn't started 17 yet, right? It was 7-9? Yeah, it was 7-9. Where you go, this is a donut. This donut's delicious. I'm having a great time. But this isn't real nutrition. This isn't nothing. This isn't anything sustainable or prolonged or long-term. This is fun, empty calories right now. I'm going to enjoy it, but just know more difficult roads ahead. We didn't know how bad it was going to be, but we knew that we probably should have been eating our vegetables, if that makes any sense. To me, it'll feel a lot like that, to be honest with you, where you beat a bunch of bad teams. You got more of them this year, and that's great, but you know, it's not that special. Whereas if you finish kind of, you know, more in line with how you were for most of the season, you go, this is pretty special. In addition to having the quarterback and the future lined up.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, joining you live from New Orleans, where the Saints and the Commanders play on Sunday. We're getting ready for some big-time football in the NFC. Important December pigskin, just the way it's supposed to be for Washington. Our double play is next. You're listening to The Fan. Back in the French Quarter, not far from Bourbon Street at Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans, getting ready for a weekend in the Big Easy. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. It is time for our double play, driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealer. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. Danny, why don't you get us started?
Do a little DP action. I watched, per your recommendation, by the way, this is The Zodiac Speaking, the three-part documentary series on the Netflix. So very, very good. Very little that I mean, it's one of those things where I, at one point, did a deep dive and was fascinated by it, then, of course, carried on living my life and forgot about some of the details. So it was really, really cool to dive back into it. Of course, I've seen the David Fincher movie a long time ago, like a lot of folks, but really, really well done. And this one focuses on one particular person that is and was the most central suspect in this series of killings and letters and ciphers and just this incredible, I don't know, how this kind of took over, you know, especially the San Francisco and Bay Areas, but in California kind of at large, but then, of course, the nation. It's national news type stuff. Anytime, you know, a new cipher, a new letter was printed in publications and how it just captured the public and it scared the hell out of people, quite frankly. So I haven't had a chance to catch up and chat with my dad about it, who was, you know, kind of that age at that point in time, right, where he was a teenager when some of these things were happening. And the documentary, again, does a really, really good job. It's really entertaining. Even if it's stuff, even if you live through it and know it and remember these kind of deals, I think it's still fun to pour back over those, you know, kind of details and sort of remember. But again, it centers around one person. I will say my only complaint, okay, and I'm not spoiling anything for anybody because, again, these are historical events that actually happened. But my only complaint is, I don't know if you remember this, GP, at the very end, they were like, here's a DNA test. And you're going, okay. I got this. This is going to tell me something. Come on, give it to me. And so they end the production with, hey, we're still waiting the results of the DNA test. Anyways, that's our documentary. Have a great one. This isn't that timely. You follow me? In other words, like, these events have all occurred. This is all history. The investigations have all been investigated. You showed me the person doing the DNA test. The results. What are the results?
I don't remember that. So they did.
What are the results?
I thought they had the little text at the end that said what the results were. Like
it did
that
not.
They were inconclusive.
No, they go the you know, we're anyway. We're still waiting the results of the DNA test. Then interview several people.
How long does that take? Life up.
I have no idea. Does it take a year? Does it take 6 months? Does it take 2 days? I have no clue. But they just sort of, they were like, okay, that's all for us. Because again, the story ultimately is both, it centers around one suspect, but also this one family that. It's unfathomable what they went through.
Oh, it's crazy.
Right? Whether this dude was the dude or not, at a minimum, horrible behavior, shady stuff.
Are you still of the belief that it might not have been him?
Oh, no. Well, they refused to slam the gavel. I did. Old Danny Ruge yeah. made up his mind. But I mean, that's not how our system works, thankfully. Right. But I know who it was.
Yeah, I convicted him in my mind.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I got this one. Now, the documentary does a good job of setting that up. But, yeah, I mean, I think that was the dude. But this one family and this guy were totally intertwined, and it looked like the mom was kind of covering for him at a minimum. His regular terrible behavior that probably wasn't that wasn't Zodiac stuff.
Right.
Like he went to jail for horrible things that are so reprehensible and so bad. And she was like, oh, well, whoopsie daisy. He's nice to me. Awful. So terrible.
It's crazy.
But so bad. But anyway, this family's just ripped apart by this, and it's so awful. And it kind of cuts to, you know, one guy tragically that was at the end of his life. He was, you know, much older gentleman who was very sick. But still, it was like what they went through this whole journey. So they kind of moved to that. And it's like, okay, I'd like to see this. Give me some closure with the family. And then they're like, okay, that's all for us. Take it easy. And I'm left wanting more. But now I've been doing a lot of Googling of late.
Yeah, it's a tremendous doc. It gets really you kind of into the obsession of the story.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where the more things you click on and you read, the more intoxicating it can be, and the more you're in on it. But it's great, and that's what Netflix is all about. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the content machine, man. It's good. I think this is Bargov. Is that how you say this name? Bargov in Gaithersburg wants to talk GMs with us real quick. What's up? How are you?
Hey, man, doing well. Appreciate taking my call.
You got it.
Yeah, man. So from your perspective, how do you think successful GMs balance or grapple with imposter syndrome and Dunning-Kruger? You know, like delusional self-confidence and delusional self-doubt. Obviously, as humans, it's tough to truly be self-objective. So I would just be curious on your thoughts, you know, successful GMs and front office people, how do they balance these two?
It's a great question, actually. Sort of big picture, long term.
We just went from your TV show recap to his 500 level course.
Like, you know, Dunning-Kruger. Totally.
Sociology.
Yeah, Dane Dunning and Zach Kruger on the Beltway Blitzlighter. There's something, it's a pathology we talk about all the time. These guys that get to the highest levels of both of sports, both as players, then as coaches, then maybe as executives, really and truly believe that they're the best. You have to. You have to have an irrational arrogance and confidence in your abilities to do any of this stuff, to be an alpha, then to command other alphas, then to command the guy that commands the alphas. You've got to have a huge, larger-than-life presence in some way. Even if you're quiet, you still have to give off this air that you know exactly what you're doing at all times. And that leads to decisions. And when they're siloed, a.k.a. you're the only one making the decisions, you can make some terrible ones, whether that's a draft pick or a free agent signing or going against type or whatever. So you always have to caution against that. But ultimately, it is it's the path that the really good ones have to walk.
I was expecting a question like, what kind of year did you think Adam Peters had?
They're like, do you guys like Adam Peters?
That was a little deeper than that.
Yeah, he's like, what about Dane Dunning and Zach Kruger?
We've got Connor McMichael of the Capitals on the Beltway Blitz coming up in just a couple of moments at the top of the hour. You will want to hear from him. He's had a tremendous season. The Caps are rolling. They got another win thanks to Alexi Protas last night. We'll also cover the NFL and the Commanders in the Blitz in moments.